Out of respect, you do not hear Notorious B.I.G.'s Big Papa. That's because for the first time here on the Packer Report podcast, brought to you by Stadium View Bar and Grill, we are down a man. Gilbert Brown is not with us. We have him in our thoughts and prayers. They're dealing with some personal stuff over there. We anticipate Gilbert being back sooner rather than later, but it had already been too long without a show. So we put the bat signal up in the air, and our friend, the editor of the Packer Report, Andy Herman, answered the call. Andy, how you doing, buddy?
Hey, Ross. Thanks so much for having me. You and Gilbert always do such a tremendous job, so I'm honored to be on and have literally some big shoes to fill.
Yeah, you do. You have very large shoes to fill. Again, like I said, Gilbert, we're thinking about you and really excited to get you back on the show when we get a chance to do that. But we wanted to do something a little different because, you know, Gilbert and I so often are doing, you know, old stories about when he used to play or just talking about, you know, goofy stuff. Like he and I like to talk about cars or comic books or movies or whatever. And I understand that people enjoy that, especially the stuff that comes from the Packers Hall of Famer. But this gives Andy and I an opportunity to really dive in together. It's not something we'd get a chance to do a ton. I do contribute over at Pack a Day. Jake and I have Tuesdays, I believe every other Tuesday. But Andy and I don't actually ever cross paths directly like this very often. So this is a special treat for me and something that we're gonna get into the football pretty deep, I think, this time, because it's not necessarily Gilbert and I's MO, and so we're gonna provide a little something different for the good people. So let's talk about the combine. Andy, I had a chance to be down there with one of our contributors, Jacob Morley, and about every other member of the NFL media, scouts, head coach. You were about the only guy that wasn't there.
I know. I felt left out. I felt bad. I definitely have to get there next year. That's for sure.
But a very cool experience for me, certainly. Had been around before, but last year, scheduled my travel like an idiot. Didn't get a chance to talk to Gutekunstin and wouldn't have been McCarthy. Would have been LaFleur last year as well, as kind of one of his first acts as Packers head coach. But I did miss that. And so getting to really, you know, stand about 4 feet away from both Coach LaFleur and Brian and ask questions was kind of a cool deal. And boy, did we turn out content during that time. That was something that I really had a ton of fun doing, and we hope that it was tremendously informational for you guys. We hope that you enjoyed some of the questions that we asked and some of the answers that we got. Andy, you had the opportunity, though, to kind of sit back as somebody taking in all the information. You know, when you're there and you're running to get quotes from this guy and that guy, or you're running to edit videos or transcribe interviews and stuff like that, sometimes you miss the coverage that's on TV or you miss the drills. You really got to take it all in as an observer. Who were some of the guys that checked some boxes for you? Some of the guys that maybe there's a tie broken. Maybe there was a guy that, his workout made you go back to the film. Who were your winners from this combine?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, I think the NFL Network does a tremendous job. You talk about, you know, 4 days of combine action where there's action taking place, but there's only so many times you can kind of cover a 40-yard dash and, you know, certain drills before it kind of gets, to be overwhelming for a casual fan. Now, most casual fans aren't turning in, obviously, to this, but I just thought Daniel Jeremiah and Rich Eisen and the entire crew, you know, friend of the podcast, Ben Fennell, and the production team, I thought all of those guys just did such a tremendous job of not only covering the event, giving kind of the major ebbs and flows of the event, but telling good stories and making it as entertaining as possible. So first of all, kudos to those guys. As far as some of the stuff that kind of stood out to me, I thought, you know, from a wide receiver standpoint, both good and bad, first of all, Justin Jefferson, running the time that he ran, it was just kind of the icing on the cake. I really liked what I saw on tape from Jefferson already, but then to go out and kind of, you know, perform the way that he did at the combine, of course he was kind of a big story with the 4.48, 4.43, whatever it was that he ran. But I thought that just kind of, like I said, added the icing on the cake to what was already an impressive set of tape that he had out there. And then, you know, kind of on the the flip side, Laviska Shenault, Jalen Reagor had some, kind of red flags that stood out. So those were a couple of the big takeaways from kind of the receiver portion. CeeDee Lamb for me, I know what he ran and I know some of those things, and it wasn't necessarily the sexiest performance in that regards, but that catch that he made on the sidelines, and you just kind of watch him, don't even look at the numbers, just how he carried himself, the confidence, the swagger, just doing the little things. To me, he cemented himself as wide receiver one in my book. So that was something that stood out. Derek Brown on the flip side, I thought that was a really interesting performance. And then, with his pro day, deciding not to try to do better, in the three cone, I thought was interesting today as well. So just kind of some stories like that. And I know a lot of the coverage from the combine has kind of been covered to death at this point, but I'll be totally transparent, Ross. This is, definitely much more of your, level of expertise with you being there. I'm really curious as some of the things that stood out to you, actually being at the combine.
Yeah, so some of the highs, I guess, would be I was just incredibly impressed with Tristan Wirfs, a guy that, we're going to be honest with you, is not going to be a Green Bay Packer.
Because going from Brian Bulaga, Iowa, to Tristan Wirfs, Iowa, would have been amazing.
It would have been so strong, so athletic. Those guys are Iowa prospects, specifically Iowa offensive line prospects. I know about Robert Gallery. I do. I know. but other than that, man, those guys have been so bust proof over there. I mean, you talk about Brian Bulaga being, an excellent football player, and Brandon Scherf being an excellent football player, and not even just offensive linemen. I think obviously that Micah Hyde was very, very good, for his draft position, but they just have, and you keep going with the offensive linemen too, Marshall Ganda, Riley Reiff, who I would say maybe isn't the best tackle in the world, but has certainly achieved what his draft position would request. But Ganda being one of the better guards in all of football, Brian Bulaga maybe being the best right tackle in football, and if not the best, one of the best. These guys, year after year after year, are putting excellent offensive linemen into the league, and
some tight ends who can block like offensive linemen too, George Kittle, TJ Hockenson, to say the least. So yeah, that's an impressive program
for sure. And so I just really like him as a player, top to bottom. I thought he was really, really impressive. I thought CJ Henderson, our buddy Eric Crocker, who he's like my Brad Kelly for corners. I respect his opinion. Played a little bit of corner in the league, played some indoor football as well after kind of washing out of the NFL, but is a DB's coach now, and he loves CJ Henderson, as do I. A guy that just has every athletic gift in the world, I think is the draft's best man corner. Okuda, I think, is the most complete prospect, and frankly, the most complete prospect at corner in a really long time period. But CJ Henderson in a man scheme, I think is just absolutely terrifying. And then you mentioned some of the things that the receivers were able to do. And then my guy, Derek Tuska from North Dakota State, in a group of edge rushers that frankly aren't all that athletic, for him to be an 87 percentile athlete, have that RAS of 8.7, and specifically my favorite drill, everybody knows from all my work with pass rushers, a 6.86 or 6.98 anywhere, a sub 7.3 cone for a 6 foot 4.5, 250 pound defensive end. I'm all in. I'm very, very happy for Derek in the way that he was able to, show out some concerns I have. And I know there are a lot of folks that disagree with this, but Cameron Dantzler, the cornerback from Mississippi State, just in interviewing him, he is an extremely thin human being, does not physically look prepared for the rigors of the NFL schedule. And then for him to run the time that he ran is just about disqualifying. Same thing kind of goes for KJ Hill of Ohio State. Not that he won't work out, but his inclusion with the, the Reggers and the Michael Pittman Juniors and stuff like that, for me, I'm a big no-go on KJ Hill anywhere in the top 100 anymore. that those were kind of the bigger losers for me. I think Derek Brown lost himself a lot of money. I think you're going to have the Jonathan Allen from Alabama syndrome, where he was so unathletic that you just, okay, well, maybe he's a two down player. Okay, well, I'm not taking a two down player in the top five. Did you have any other guys that, I know you mentioned you didn't love, obviously, Rager's three cone, LaVisca's straight line speed is probably what you didn't like. I'm not sure, but did you have any other guys where you saw stuff and you're like, oof,
yeah, I like him. Quintez Cephas, you know, kind of going along with your wide receivers. Yeah. That was dangerously poor time for him. I still like Cephas just based off of film, but you talk about, your thresholds and it being a major red flag. That's obviously a major red flag for Quintez Cephas. That was another one that stood out. Going back to something you said about CJ Henderson, though, it just reminds me so much of, back with Denzel Ward being the first corner taken and then Jaire Alexander being number two. This time Okuda's going to be one, CJ Henderson's going to be two. Those just seem to parallel each other so incredibly well.
For sure. And also I want to, so one of the things I wanted to bring up, and I've dealt with it a little bit, and I had some commandments, which honestly, they came off a little high and mighty. And I understand that sometimes I do have a tendency to talk down to people online. I try to be better about that, but it does happen. And one of the commandments is do not helmet scout. And I started that. Part of it was defending Carson Wentz and his potential at the next level. And then some of it got to be the, you don't like what happened. Well, just what we just said. You didn't like Robert Gallery, so you wouldn't draft Brian Bulaga. Okay, that makes you an idiot.
Don't draft Jeff Tedford quarterbacks either, right?
Right. But the two that I'm running into is, oh my God, you can't draft a corner from Florida, after Hayden and Hargreaves, and you can't draft a quarterback from Alabama because they never work out. Tua and CJ are good prospects. I don't care if it says, Butler University on the side of their helmets. Like it's just beyond me. And I think that is something that the combine really does a good job of as well for small school guys, for guys trying to, even in that sense, remove some of the stigma of the program they played at. If quarterbacks from this school never work out, or offensive linemen from this school always bust, at the combine, these guys are all just in the same corporate sponsored stuff, and they've got a number and they've got a name, and they're all on an even playing field, perfect conditions in a dome on turf. Everybody has the exact same opportunity to succeed as everybody else, and I think that's one of the things I absolutely love about the combine.
Yeah, and I think going back to CJ Henderson for Florida, I think how at least for me, I kind of go about that is, all right, in the back of my mind, you mentioned some of those corners like Hayden and Hargreaves. All right, they didn't work out at Florida, and we know that. So I think it's okay to have in the back of your mind is something like, all right, let me go back and watch it just to make sure these last couple of corners from Florida didn't work out. I just want to make sure it's not something that they're doing from a system standpoint. But it's a totally, different system. The coaches have changed. The player is different. You obviously go back to the tape of the player in and of itself. I think it's good to double check it if there's been a trend, because I think trending, can trend itself out, but it makes zero difference as to what Harden and Hargreaves did as to what CJ Henderson's going to do. So I'm 100% with you. I just like to, I think some of those trends can help to double check some things kind of as a just in case sort of thing.
Yeah. And I think that does make a little bit of sense. Like you made fun of the Jeff Tedford quarterback things, but that holding the ball way up by your head and some of the weird stuff that he had guys do that worked in college, it did give guys troubles in the pros. And there probably are programs, that ask people to do certain things that aren't maybe not necessarily best for them, but best for preparing them for the league. Yep. We just saw it with, is it Don Brown or Dan Brown at Michigan? Don Brown?
Don Brown.
Yeah, Don Brown. We just saw that with Don Brown or Rashawn Gary. Like his job was to basically not be productive so that his teammates could be productive. And I think after a year, we're still wondering if he can be productive, but that was almost an admission on their part that, like, well, we don't really know, what the what Gary's capable of, because Michigan asked him to eat up double teams and take out the tackle and the tight end so that the linebackers could eat. And boy, did Devin Bush eat. But it's all part of this puzzle that is scouting. And boy, the draft was, or the combine was a ton of fun. And so is the draft going to be. And this, Andy, is where I'm going to offer you the opportunity to make a little plug, because my and we cannot agree on a name for anything, but my baby girl is going to be here within probably a month, and there's a 0% chance that my wife is going to allow me to jet off to Las Vegas to cover the draft when she's 2-3 weeks old, which I completely understand. But you're going to be there, and so I, as I mentioned, would like to I would like to have the opportunity to give you a chance to explain what you're going to be doing.
Yeah, so I'm going to be down there for a couple different things. I'm sure, obviously, I'll be covering the event for a Packer Report, but I'm also going to be down there for Pro Football Network. For those who aren't aware, I actually do a weekly podcast for Pro Football Network with Tony Pauline. First of all, Tony's tremendous, and he has broken multiple stories this season already before anyone else has had them. And getting to kind of pick his brain every week on that podcast has been just tremendous. So Tony Pauline, Ben Albright, really two of the insiders that Pro Football Network has, are going to be down there along with myself. And we're going to be hosting a live draft party at the MGM Grand. Not only are Tony and Ben going to be there along with myself, but there's also going to be a couple different players. Preston Williams from the Dolphins, as well as Max Crosby from the Raiders, are both going to be there. And I probably should have opened with this, because for Packer fans, this will be the most important thing. All you can eat and all you can drink is also included in that event. So it's going to be a ton of fun. I'm super excited about it. And I mean, you just talk about, you know, NFL players, personalities like Tony and Ben, breaking news, the NFL draft at a casino in Vegas. The whole thing is just going to be amazing. And then you add in free food, or not free food, it's the event costs money, but all you can eat, all you can drink is going to be so much fun. So I'm looking forward to that. The draft is, as you know, Ross, you know, it's as fun of a night as there is, or a fun of three nights or two nights in a day that there is on the NFL calendar. It's like a constantly unwrapping presents. And it's not only just, I know for you as well as for me, it's not only just for the Packers either. Seeing where some of these prospects end up, I remember last year, especially look at some of the receivers, I was so geeked to see where some of these receivers were going to go, because you scout them for so long. And then, you know, guys like Deebo Samuel, you see go to the 49ers and you just know that's going to be an amazing fit with their offense. I actually think Jalen Hurd would have been the same thing had he not gotten hurt. You know, DK Metcalf, just such a perfect matchup for Russell Wilson and that deep ball. You get to unwrap some of those things, see where they end up, and kind of get excited about it. So it's always, always fun. And I'm really jacked up to kind of host that event at the MGM Grand for Pro Football Network as well.
That's awesome. That's awesome, man. I would be something that, you know, I would have loved to have been a part of. Not that I was invited, but I would have loved to have been a part of that. I'd love to have covered draft from Las Vegas. It's certainly a place I've been on more than one occasion. We used to have, or we still do, but I'm not participating this year, tradition of going down there for the first weekend of March Madness every year.
Nice.
Vegas is a fun time. It's a fantastic time. That sounds like an awesome event. It's just not a place I'm going to be this year. We got, you know, growing up, we got big things going on around here. Speaking of big things, folks, I would guess, and I don't have any information yet, but I would guess that there's going to be a phenomenal draft party over at Stadium View Bar, Grill, and Banquet Hall. They are, you know, kind of easily in the Green Bay area, the best big event space, because of just how big that banquet hall is, just how awesome the new renovations are. Guys, they have fantastic food and drink specials. I would assume that there are going to be phenomenal NFL draft-related food and drink specials. I don't know anything about the draft party yet, but I'm going to pretty much guarantee you that the draft party over at Stadium View Bar, Grill, and Banquet Hall is going to be phenomenal. Andy, you're a Green Bay resident. What's your favorite part about our title sponsor?
Yeah, I mean, I just think the renovations they did were phenomenal. I mean, you know, adding on to what was already a really nice establishment, I think the menu's great. The wait staff is always super friendly. So that, you know, I'll be totally transparent, and this is not knocking Stadium View. It wasn't my go-to before. When they did all the renovations, it is now absolutely my go-to downtown in Green Bay. Actually, when we did for the playoff game, Peter Bukowski of Packer Report was there, Maggie Loney of Cheesehead TV, Dusty Evely of Packer Report. We had a bunch of people get together and we went to Stadium View. So it's a fantastic place and I can't recommend it enough.
Absolutely. Ever since that renovation, it's great. And as the world turns a little bit here and we get warmer and warmer, their outdoor space is phenomenal, guys. Yeah. And it's the ability to open up those big garage doors into that new bar, and almost always on a big weekend, having live music out kind of in the lot there, really, really fun. And as you guys know, every Packers home game, there's a Gilbert Brown tailgate party. And so just a phenomenal place to be. All right, let's get into the actual Green Bay Packers, because we've been talking a lot of ball, which I'm sure people are enjoying. But the Packers themselves, this is what we kind of know so far. And a lot of this comes from our buddy Ken Ingles, who just is, I think he's a CPA or some, he's a giant nerd, is kind of the more accurate part. But what Ken has basically figured out is that the Packers will have about 19.7 million, but they'll have about 20 million to spend here. They have already, or it has basically, they haven't announced anything, but it has basically already come out that Jimmy Graham is no longer going to be a part of the plan. But Lane Taylor is also expected to not be part of the plan unless they want him to start at right guard and start Billy Turner at right tackle, which is not exciting, but it's also not completely out of the realm of possibility. If, you know, say they bring in a mid-level receiver, sign Austin Hooper and sign Corey Littleton, now all of a sudden maybe there is, you know, some shuffling on the offensive line. But that's kind of what I want to get. That's where I want to get with you here, Andy, is where do you view the Packers' needs? And some of these names that have come out from our time in Indianapolis, Austin Hooper, I think, has been specifically named. Joe Schobert has been specifically named. Nick Kwiatkowski from the Bears and Corey Littleton. Am I missing anybody that has come out specifically as a target?
No, those are the four that have been named by name by various reports across the Packers, you know, reporter sphere, if you will. So, no, those are the four that have been officially named.
So where do you kind of see all of that fitting in? One thing that I really am gravitating towards is a small phrase by Rob Domofsky, who got a chance to see Rob again in Indianapolis, is absolutely just a pro's pro. Couldn't have been nicer to me. Had no reason to be that nice and that welcoming to me, and just is as plugged in as and is as synced up as you could possibly be. Want to add two pass catchers, and that's kind of what both the phrasing and the actual words are what grabbed me. Naming Austin Hooper as a specific target, it really seems like with pick 30, pick 62, or free agency, there's going to be two receivers or a receiver and a tight end that we've heard of that are going to be in green and gold next year. Do you not get that feeling?
A million percent. And I mean, I've said, you know, first of all, with this draft being as stacked as it is as wide receiver, I mean, if they leave with any less than two wide receivers, and I think even arguably three wide receivers, I'm not sure that they've, you know, completely done what they probably should have done in the draft. And I'm not saying that that couldn't be like a second round pick, a fifth round pick, and a seventh round pick. I'm not saying it has to be a one and two and a three, obviously, but this is just such a deep draft that I think you're going to find players on day two that would maybe normally go day one. And I think you're going to find receivers on day three that would normally go on day two. So first of all, from that standpoint, I absolutely believe that they're going to add weapons for sure in the draft. But no, the way that Rob phrased it, I'm 100% with you. They are looking to add weapons to this arsenal. And I want to go back to something that I said last year. You know, the question coming off of, you know, Mike McCarthy's last season in Green Bay and transitioning to Matt LaFleur, a lot of that was about kind of getting Aaron Rodgers 100% back on track and trying to get him back to maybe that a little bit of that MVP level. Mark Murphy kind of even not so subtly hinted at that in Matt LaFleur's initial press conferences, getting the offense back on track the way that it used to be. And a lot of the questions stemming from that final Mike McCarthy season was it due to the Mike McCarthy scheme that it was just stale and it was old? Was it just that the players had lost favor with Mike McCarthy and it just didn't kind of work anymore? Was it Aaron Rodgers' injuries? You know, what were those questions? And was it some of the offensive line play as well? So Brian Gutekunst very aggressively addressed a lot of those issues, and the organization addressed a lot of those issues by going out and getting an offensive-minded head coach, getting a new head coach, getting a new offensive coordinator, plugging those gaps along the offensive line with an Elgton Jenkins and a Billy Turner, and really solidifying that, making Aaron Jones a more focal part of the offense. And things were better, but if you look at a lot of the numbers statistically for Rodgers going from 1 year to the next, it was almost identical. And you look at whatever metric that you want to look at, whether you want to look at Pro Football Focus grades, whether you want to look at my grades, whether you want to look at just the pure passer rating and statistical analysis, whatever you want to look at, it was almost apples to apples, the performance that Rodgers had from 1 year to the next, save for obviously the most important thing, which is winning football games. All of that is to say, the one thing that's kind of left, the one question that is left to answer before we get to, we've just kind of reached an Aaron Rodgers decline and it is what it is. And I'm not saying that's a massive decline. He's still a phenomenal quarterback, no question, but it's not the same Rodgers we saw in his MVP years. The one question that's left to ask is, what happens if we get this guy tremendous weapons and just let those weapons go to work? Because when Rodgers was really in his prime, he had a lot of those weapons. And we know the names, the drivers, the Nelsons, the Cobbs, the Jennings, the Finleys, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. You know, right now, this past season, it was Davante Adams and some pieces around there. And of course, Aaron Jones is both a receiving weapon and as a running weapon. But outside of that, not guys that were separating with regularity. And we saw Alan Lazard step up a little bit, and I still think he can be a nice piece. I think Jay Sternberger can, over time be a weapon in that arsenal as well. But Mercedes Lewis had lost all the ability to separate. Jimmy Graham was not the player that they expected him to be. A lot of the receivers, whether it be Marquez Valdes-Scantling or even, obviously Equanimee St. Brown was hurt, but even going back to Jamon Moore did not develop the way that they were hoping to. So they just didn't have those weapons. And I think this is the last piece to that equation. They've got the running back. I think they're still going to address that right tackle position, whether it be with Bulaga or somebody else. I think they're going to have the offensive line. They have Rodgers. They have the coach. They have the system. What happens now when you put more weapons around them? And I think that's what they're going to aggressively try to do this offseason.
So what would you like to do? Where are your priorities? I know like our guy Jacob Westendorf is a big re-sign Bulaga and then figure it out later guy. I'm a little bit, if you can guarantee me Jared Veld here, then I'm kind of on the let's move on type of way where you saw them do with Sitton and Lang and frankly with Tauscher. I think if the Packers think it's time to move on from an offensive lineman, there is not some great history of 30-year-old offensive linemen from Green Bay playing awesome until they're 36 and making the front office look like a bunch of idiots. I think if they decide it's time to move on, they've earned that. And then not that they have anything to prove to me, but I'm just saying, in my opinion, they've earned the right to maybe not so much be questioned as far as the offensive line guys are concerned. And so if they think they can, do a quick 2-year deal with almost no guaranteed money in year two for Jared Veldheer and then bring along Yosh Nijman or bring along Ezra Cleveland in round 3 or Josh Jones in round 1 or whatever, I think that is one path. But that kind of limits you then, because then you're not getting, I can promise you this, unless the CBA is ratified and they kind of know what they're doing with the money and they can sort of kick the can down the street, or they can actually kick the can down the street by extending, restructuring Rodgers, extending Bakhtiari, extending Adams, and kind of restructuring some of those deals to create some immediate space. If they do sign Bulaga to any kind of a deal that's around what he's actually worth, maybe they can go get one other piece. You could have Bulaga and Hooper or Bulaga and Littleton, but that's it. This two pass catcher dream is dead. Or, you know, if it's Bulaga and Littleton, then it's all rookies. You know, all of the incoming guys are going to be rookies or somebody that, you know, someone else cuts in camp for cap reasons.
Yeah, it's all super interesting. So I'll start with Bulaga. And I think the really interesting dynamic here is I do believe that they would like to move on for a couple different reasons. I think the first one is the one that's obvious and that you mentioned. This is their history. The offensive lineman gets to, you know, past the age of 30. They don't want to get that second contract. Heck, even with a guy like Josh Sitton, they got rid of him before, or the third contract, excuse me. They got rid of him with a year left on his deal. You know, Marco Rivera was the right move to make with Marco Rivera. It's just their operating procedure that when they reach a specific age, they're usually moving on from that player. And I think they would love to do so again with Brian Bulaga. I think the other reason is you look at what San Francisco did along the offensive line last year, and they're running a very similar, if not almost identical, you know, system across the offensive line. But they were so much more athletic from a run blocking standpoint, being able to shoot up out of their stance, immediately get to their spot, and then get to the second level out on the field as well. And Brian Bulaga does a lot of things very, very well. Pass protection, obviously, being one of those. And we saw the gauntlet he went through at the beginning of the year last year and really kept Rodgers clean. But that's something that's not really in his arsenal anymore. So I think they would love to get younger and more athletic and be able to maybe run Matt LaFleur's system a little bit more effectively with kind of the players that he wants at that position. So when you hear the reports that they haven't reached out to his agent and they haven't reached out to him yet about, you know, contract negotiations, I do think that they want to move on. I think there's a legitimacy there. Where I go with it is, man, these players at the right tackle position are very difficult to find. And if you do not find a at least serviceable one, things can go downhill incredibly fast. And while, you know, I understand the concept of, you know, going with maybe Jared Valdir, he's the same age, still has some athletic concerns, and also retired last year when the Patriots were kind of hoping that he was going to play. So I know he says he wants to play, but there was kind of that theory last year as well. And he doesn't always check all those boxes that you want either. Now, the cheaper portion of that is what makes it a little bit more palatable. So if you have kind of an apples to apples comparison, even though I don't think Valdir is as good, I understand maybe, you know, what, $5 or $6 million for Valdir rather than $12 or $13 million for Bulaga, whatever those numbers may be. I understand that argument, but at the same token, I think it's such an important position for Aaron Rodgers because of how long he holds the ball and his propensity to try to buy time and make plays downfield. You better have tackles who can pass protect for long periods of time, or that becomes an issue as well. So I really think they're between a rock and a hard place at that position of not really wanting to go any significant period of time or any significant guaranteed money with Brian Bulaga. And at the same token, he's going to get that out on the open market, I believe, but they don't have that replacement either. So I would keep him, I would retain him, but I think there's a lot of question marks there. And then to answer your original question of what I think the biggest need is on this team, I know I'm one of the few, but I totally believe that Kenny Clark needs help along the defensive line. And whether that's a Michael Pierce or a DJ Reader, or even more of a second tier type of guy, you know, like a Jordan Phillips, someone like that, maybe a Jerron Reed from Seattle. I don't know that you necessarily have to break the bank for this type of player, but the thing that I go back to is the four.
Do it.
Yeah, exactly.
Should have done it last year.
They should have done it last year. But the four games that they lost last year, the Chargers, the 49ers, and the Eagles, they got gashed right in the middle of the field. And we can talk about replacing middle linebacker, and that absolutely needs an upgrade, but it starts up front. And some of those games, the gap integrity and the physicality up front were just brutal. And that's a big reason why they lost four of those games. And just last thing, the bigger thing there is, imagine that defensive line at the moment if Kenny Clark were to go down hurt for any extended period of time. It's horrifying. So I think they have to do something there. And I honestly think it's one of the bigger needs going into this offseason.
It is. And it's something that I've been talking about, something that Gilbert and I talk about constantly. I mean, it shouldn't surprise you, Andy, that Gilbert thinks they should, add a defensive lineman.
No, not at all.
But I've been saying it. I said, if pie in the sky, I could add one guy from this offseason to be Chris Jones. Now, the Chiefs have franchised Chris Jones and will probably trade him, and that's not, I don't think, palatable for Green Bay, trading for Chris Jones off the tag. But that was my, what I would love. And what I would love would be somebody, who's, and I don't even know who's available like this besides Chris Jones, but I mean, I would love somebody who's 6'6", 6'5" and a half, long arms, somebody, because Kenny Clark's a little squatty, somebody that on those two-man lines can really get up the field on passing downs, but can also really cover a lot of ground and really mess stuff up in those zone schemes. That's what 3-4 defensive lines have. That's been the goal, right? The absolute ideal dream at the 5-tech position are these long, Cam Hayward type, Calais Campbell type dudes. And so that's what I would love to see, would be a long gifted defensive lineman next to Kenny Clark. I absolutely understand, but at the same time, I mean, the reports and also the struggles of last season, plus the outright release of Graham, I think those have kind of put tight end receiver and linebacker into the crosshairs of everyone. The other one that I would say you absolutely cannot sleep on is cornerback. You can never have enough corners in this league. And right now, the Packers really only have one. And I know that sounds insane, but you can really start to pick apart all of the corners on the roster that aren't Jair Alexander. Kevin King, very inconsistent. Turns the other team over a lot, which is great, but very inconsistent. Also kind of injury prone. Also playing on an expiring contract. Tremont Williams, old. There's, not going to play very much longer. Chandon Sullivan, awful draft pedigree. If he puts another great season in the slot on film like he did last year, then that kind of stuff goes away. Because guess what? Tremont Williams wasn't drafted either. But, flashes in the pan do happen. That's Tony Brown's not on the team anymore. These things are legitimate concerns. Josh Jackson, we don't even know what we have in Josh Jackson at this point. Kadar Holman, press man corner, look good in the preseason. What do we actually know? Almost nothing. So it's important that I think they add another skilled coverage player in some way. And I mentioned I would love to get a single high free safety and drop Darnell Savage down into the nickel or the dime. I think that's a good idea. I think that is something that could work. Or if they just get, another true cover corner, like one of my favorite fits for the Packers at 62, if Lord willing he was there, is Bryce Hall. And Bryce Hall would have been a top 10, 12 pick out of Virginia at corner if he would have stayed healthy, or maybe even if he would have just come out last year. Had a kind of a gross ankle injury going into this season and is looked at more of a second round guy, but he has all the upside in the world of a top 10, 15 pick. I think corner is a place where they have to pay a little bit of attention.
Here's what I'll say in regards to that. And I don't disagree with anything that you said about the depth of the corner position, but what I want to say is that from a defensive back standpoint, I think they've made their biggest acquisition so far in bringing in Jerry Gray and trying to take the immense talent that they have amassed at the cornerback position. And you talk about the defensive back position, the big contract for Adrian Amos, a trade up in the first round for Darnell Savage, a top 20 pick for Jair Alexander, basically a first round pick for Kevin King, mid second top 50 pick for Josh Jackson, another investment with a draft pick in Kadar Holman. And then, even Chandon Sullivan, who showed flash a season ago and played really well when he got on the field. I think they have absolutely every ingredient that they need in that secondary to be a top tier secondary. They just haven't done it yet. And I think their hope is that Jerry Gray can come in and he can be the guy that brings kind of everything together, that gets the most out of these players, and they can perform up to their peak expectation. And the reason that I say that is I just think there's limited resources that Brian Gutekunst has to use. We talked about needing to fill that right tackle position and needing to add weapons. He wants two, probably top top tier type of guys, whether it's via free agency or the draft. We're talking either early draft picks or probably some significant money in the free agency market to kind of shore up one of those positions. We already talked about defensive line needing some upgrade. We already talked about inside linebacker needing a fairly significant upgrade. I just think that there's bigger needs everywhere else, and that if they can't get the most out of the talent that's on this team in the secondary, I just don't think that they can continue to spend at that position. And if they can't get it right with the players that are on this roster, I think you're already fighting an uphill battle. And I just think they have to find a way to tap the potential of those specific players that are there right now.
Yeah, I don't disagree. It's just the there right now thing is what I'm a little nervous about, just in the sense that it, you know, we're building the team and you're drafting for 2-3 years down the road, which you're supposed to technically be doing. I know that needs-based drafting happens all the time. You can look at that cornerback room as a place that won't have Tremont Williams and Kevin King, and then that's a different conversation. But we're running out of time a little bit here. Andy and I could do, you know, a 3-hour megapod with absolutely no troubles for sure. But right now we're kind of hitting that 40-minute sweet spot. So before I let you go, Andy, give me one name that if I had a gun to your head, after the third day of free agency, X will be a Green Bay Packer. Who is X?
Yeah, I'm going to go with Corey Littleton. And I just think I wrote the article for Packer Reports last week of, you know, what I thought Brian Gutekunst would target in free agency. And there were a few specific things that I noted that he kind of has, you know, done over the course of the last couple of years. I know we don't have a ton of info just with 2 years, but we know already, both via the draft and free agency, his propensity to go after rare athletes, whether we want to talk about RAS scores or whatever. Rare, tall, physical athletes is generally what he targets. I also think he looks at players who are, 27 years of age or younger. The all four signings a season ago, 27 or younger, first contract, coming into the prime of their careers. So, and then at a major, you know, area of need being the other one. And I think Corey Littleton hits all of those things to a T. Matt Bowen on Twitter, you know, posted some of the top free agents and where they fit best from a scheme standpoint. His match, Corey Littleton to Green Bay. Bill Huber reported from Sports Illustrated, basically saying that Corey Littleton was their number one target at the inside linebacker position. I just think you start to put all those tea leaves together, and that would be, gun to my head, who I think they're going to walk away with in the first, you know, 2-3 days of free agency.
I'm going to go with Austin Hooper for a lot of the same reasons, because he is an ascending player. He is young. I believe Austin's like 25 years old. He has had success with Matt LaFleur in the past. And the other thing that I really think is that this is such a copycat league, Andy. And what did we just see in the Super Bowl?
Travis Kelce and George Kittle.
Exactly. The two best tight ends in the league were facing off in the Super Bowl right after the best tight end in the league walked off into the sunset after a Super Bowl in Rob Gronkowski. The tight end position doesn't get paid like a premium position, doesn't get drafted like a premium position, but is really in today's NFL showing itself to be a premium position. I think they think they hit with Jace Sternberger, and I'm not even convinced that they're wrong, but I think Austin Hooper, A, is a fantastic compliment, and B, is there a chance to kind of accelerate that timeline a little bit, because Jace's rookie year was basically a write-off, and a lot of tight ends, period, aren't good until year two or year three, just like Austin Hooper. I think Austin Hooper is the most likely guy to be a Green Bay Packer. Andy, thank you so much for filling in for the Gravedigger on this show. I know he appreciates it. I certainly appreciate it. We are actually, you know what, we'll play it out. We'll play it out. We'll play out the big pop, but we appreciate it. Thanks so much to all of you for listening. Thank you, of course, to Stadium View Bar, Grill, and Banquet Hall for sponsoring this show. And thank you one more time, Andy Herman. Go Pack Go.
Go Pack Go.